Let's go ahead and get started with another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through God's inspired scripture by opening to Isaiah chapter 23. You remember that Isaiah's ministry started in the year that King Uzziah died, which I believe is 738 BC. So we're looking at things that were prophesied by Isaiah during the last part of the 8th century BC. So probably in the 730s, 720s, the northern kingdom will go into exile in the last part of the 720s. And so will other nations of the Middle East come under the boot of the Assyrian Empire around that same time. So we were looking at Isaiah chapter 23 last week in reference to Tyre. Now, Tyre and Sidon are Phoenician cities. They're on the Mediterranean coast, a little bit north and west of northern Israel, and south and east from Cyprus. The Phoenicians have established many trade routes through the Mediterranean basin, as far out as Spain. And they also have connections trading out into the Indian Ocean as well. But they are coming under God's judgment. The Tyrians in particular are highlighted here. So chapter 23, verse 1, the oracle concerning Tyre. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for Tyre or Tyre is laid waste without house or harbor. Ships of Tarshish, probably a reference to a style of ship based on the ships that plied trade in the Mediterranean basin all the way out to Tarshish in far Spain. But these ships are going to be crying over the loss of Tyre as an independent kingdom because the Assyrians are going to come in and put them under their boot. From the island of Cyprus, it is revealed to them. So the ships of Tarshish find out while they're at Cyprus that the independent harbor at Tyre is no more. It's now under the control of the Assyrians. Verse 2, be still, O inhabitants of the coast. The merchants of Sidon who crossed the sea have filled you. And on many waters, your revenue was the grain of Shihor, the harvest of the Nile. You were the merchants of the nations. So they've got ships full of all sorts of trade goods, including grain, coming out of Egypt. Verse 4, be ashamed, O Sidon, for the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying, I have neither labored nor given birth. I've neither reared young men nor brought up young men. When the report comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish over the report about Tyre. So this idea that Tyre is going to come under the control of the Neo-Assyrian Empire, which is effectively going to happen because the Assyrians will choose who gets to be in charge of the harbor and the island of Tyre. That's going to disrupt normal procedures all over the Mediterranean. Verse 6, cross over to Tarshish. Wail, O inhabitants of the coast. Is this your exultant city, whose origin is from the days of old, whose feet carried her to settle far away, who have purposed this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants were princes, whose traders were the honored of the earth? So this is shocking, or it will be shocking, Isaiah says, when Tyre loses its control to the Assyrians. But then verse 9 reminds us that this is part of God's larger scheme of judgment. Verse 9, he who is of the hosts, or he who is over the armies, has proposed it. to defile the pompous pride of all glory, to dishonor all the honored of the earth. So the Tyrians had gotten full of themselves. And God was going to respond to that arrogance by taking them down quite a few notches. Verse 10, cross over your land like the Nile, O daughters of Tarshish. There is no restraint anymore. He has stretched out his hand over the sea. He has shaken the kingdoms. He who is has given command concerning Canaan to destroy its strongholds. As I said, and as we've seen in other books from this time period, God is bringing widespread judgment on the Middle East by the hands of the Assyrians. And so Isaiah is pointing out even the things that are going to happen to Tyre and Sidon are coming from He who is. Verse 12, and He said, you will no more exult, O oppressed virgin daughters, daughter of Sidon. Arise, cross over to Cyprus, even there you will have no rest. So some of the people will evacuate out of the Phoenician cities like Tyre and Sidon, and they'll head off to Cyprus. But even there, apparently there will be some impact from the Assyrians and also from the Babylonians later. And then after them, it'll be the Greeks. And then after them, others, such as the Romans, will keep on disrupting the ancient trade routes established by the Phoenicians. Verse 13, behold the land of the Chaldeans. That's a reference to Babylon. Babylon is going to arise as the next power player after the Assyrians start on decline. And so prophetically, they are always in the background during this 8th century where God is saying the Babylonians are coming and they will make an impact, even though it doesn't feel at this time in history they should be able to. Behold the land of the Chaldeans. This is the people that was not. Assyria destined it for wild beasts. They erected their siege towers. They stripped her palaces bare. They made her a ruin. Probably a continuation of what's going to be happening to the Phoenicians, to Tyre and Sidon. And we know historically that the people of Tyre and Sidon kind of recover eventually from the Assyrians, but then they come under the Babylonians. And then they recover from that, and then they come under the Greeks. And then they recover from that, and then they come under the Romans. So that's already being hinted at, that there's this cycle that will continue disrupting the arrogance of the Phoenicians out of Tyre and Sidon. Wail, O ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold is laid waste. In that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, like the days of one king. At the end of the 70 years, it will happen to Tyre as in the Song of the Prostitute. And this is where we find out that there will be this eclipse of Tyrian independence for roughly 7 decades. And different commentators have kind of placed this right around the end of the 700s down to around the 630s or so of the next century after that. That'd be about 70 years. This is the time that the leadership of Tyre was controlled by the Neo-Assyrian Empire. And once that empire started losing its steam, right around the 630s or so, that's when Tyre starts coming back to its own independence again. So that's all prophesied here in the late 800s BC. Verse number 16, take a harp, go about the city, O forgotten prostitute, make sweet melody, sing many songs that you may be remembered. At the end of 70 years, he who is will visit Tyre, and she will return to her wages and will prostitute herself with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. So it'll be business as normal again once the Assyrians are kind of out of the way. Her merchandise and her wages will be holy to he who is. It will not be stored or hoarded, but her merchandise will supply abundant food and fine clothing for those who dwell before he who is. Now, a couple of things seem to be hinted at here in that verse. One of them is that Tyre and Sidon will be helpful in the rebuilding of the Jewish nation after the exiles are over, after the Assyrian exile and the Babylonian exile. And we know that's the case, that there was some connections between the Phoenician coastline and the growing Jewish repopulation of the Promised Land. But I think there's also the ultimate connection to the millennial period, when the entire eastern end of what we call the Mediterranean basin is going to be at the core of the millennial kingdom of Jesus Christ. It'll be the new heaven and new earth version of the Mediterranean eastern basin. But nonetheless, Tyre and Sidon region will be part of Jesus' millennial kingdom. So I think that might be hinted at in the last part of chapter 23. Chapter 24, behold, he who is will empty the earth, or empty the land, and make it desolate, and he will twist its surface and scatter its inhabitants. That's tied in, at least in part, to the idea of the Assyrians exiling people. The Assyrians, after the time that Jonah was up in their capital city of Nineveh, they took to shifting people around, relocating them. And so this movement of people groups becomes very prevalent during the 8th and the 7th century BC. Verse number 2, and it shall be as with the people, so with the priest, as with the slave, so with his master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the creditor, so with the debtor. So it's going to be across the spectrum of society that this sort of relocation is going to take place. Won't matter if you're rich or poor, whether or not you're educated or not, you're still going to be impacted by these relocations. That's happening because of God's judgment. Verse 3, the earth will be utterly empty, or the land will be utterly empty and utterly plundered, for he who is has spoken his word. The earth, or again, the land, mourns and withers. The world languishes and withers. The highest people of the earth languish. The earth lies defiled under its inhabitants, for they have transgressed the laws, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, a curse devours the earth, and its inhabitants suffer for the guilt. Therefore, the inhabitants of the earth are scorched, and few men are left. This sounds very similar to what God says is going to be happening to the Israelis of the northern kingdom, and then eventually the Israelis of the southern kingdom. They will be emptied out of their promised land and relocated. And then the land is going to be empty for a period of time until new peoples are relocated back in it. Verse 7, the wine mourns, the vine languishes, all the merry-hearted sigh. The mirth of the tambourines is stilled, the noise of the jubilant has ceased. The mirth of the lyre is stilled. If you don't have a populace, then you're not going to have all the normal cultural activities and the happiness and the celebrations that take place during the different agricultural portions of the year. No more do they drink wine with singing. Strong drink is bitter to those who drink it. The wasted city is broken down. Every house is shut up so that none can enter. There is an outcry in the streets for lack of wine, because there's not people working in the vineyards. All joy has grown dark. The gladness of the earth is banished. Desolation is left in the city. The gates are battered into ruins. You know, when a foreign army, such as the Assyrians, came in and battered down your city gates, and then they took the people away, those things didn't get built back up again. For thus it shall be in the midst of the earth among the nations, as when an olive tree is beaten, as at the gleaning when the grape harvest is done. Meaning you don't see the fruit anymore, except little bits and pieces that were left behind from that main harvest. That's what it'll be like in these different cities and countries after the Assyrians are done. They lift up their voice, they sing for joy over the majesty of He who is. They shout from the west. Therefore in the east, give glory to He who is. In the coastlines of the sea, give glory to the name of He who is, the God of Israel. From the ends of the earth, we hear songs of praise of the glory to the righteous one. So there is always woven into these prophecies things related to the righteous remnant, the remnant that calls upon the name of the Lord, and the remnant that will be brought back into the land again. I waste away. Woe is me, for the traitors have betrayed. With betrayal, the traitors have betrayed. So even with these promises of redemption and renewal out there in the future, Isaiah is still thinking about the terror and the tragedy that has to happen before we ever get to the good things. Terror and the pit and the snare are upon you, O inhabitants of the earth. He who flees at the sound of terror shall fall into the pit. He who climbs out of the pit shall be caught in the snare. We've seen something similar to this before, that when these bad things happen, when the Assyrians start coming through, and then after them, the Babylonians, it'll be hard to get away. You'll think that you got away, and then you'll find out you didn't get away. And it's because God is bringing this as judgment. For the windows of heaven are opened, and the foundations of the earth tremble. The earth is utterly broken. The earth is split apart. The earth is violently shaken. The earth staggers like a drunken man. It sways like a hut. Its transgressions lie heavily upon it, and it falls and will not rise again. Now, a lot of people, when they read this section, they see in here also hints about the day of the Lord, as in the ultimate day of the Lord, the things that are described in the book of Revelation, the 3.5-year period before Jesus comes back as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And that is not surprising, because a lot of times when God's judgment is being expressed in a time period, such as the time period of the Assyrians or the time period of the Babylonians, that was the day of the Lord in that time period. It was the time for judgment. And so even though it was localized, the prophecies always had this flavor in them that there is an ultimate day of the Lord still out there in the future. So it's a sort of foreshadowing of what is yet to come. So we can kind of do both things. We can think about the judgments of these time periods, but also the ultimate judgment that's coming yet. Verse 21, on that day, He who is will punish the host of heaven in heaven and the kings of the earth on the earth. So the host of heaven, that would be the fallen angels. And we know there's going to be great judgment against the fallen angels at the time of Jesus' return. And the kings of the earth, they're also going to come under his judgment, particularly the final king, the beast leader and his false prophet. They are going to suffer under the judgment of Christ. Verse 22, they will be gathered together as prisoners in a pit. They will be shut up in a prison, and after many days, they will be punished. There is probably a hint here at the shutting away of the unrighteous dead until the millennial reign of Jesus Christ is finished, at which time the unrighteous dead will be resurrected and judged and sent to hell. And so that would be after many days. And so I think that's why this counts in my mind as a millennial passage related to the day of the Lord. Then the moon will be confounded and the sun ashamed. And that certainly makes us think about the breaking of the fifth seal at the beginning of the final 3.5 years when the sun goes dark and the moon turns blood red. For he who is over the armies reigns on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and his glory will be before his elders. And that certainly sounds like Jesus ruling and reigning with his saints out of Jerusalem. I love chapter 25. O God, you are my God. I will exalt you. I will praise your name, for you have done wonderful things, plans formed of old, faithful and sure. So a praise of the God of history and the God of the future. For you have made the city a heap, the fortified city a ruin. The foreigner's palace is a city no more. It will never be rebuilt. So when God does judgment, it is forceful. Therefore, strong peoples will glorify you. Cities of ruthless nations will fear you. For you have been a stronghold to the poor, a stronghold to the needy in his distress, a shelter from the storm and a shade from the heat. For the breath of the ruthless is like a storm against a wall. So God provides protection through the toughest of times to those who love him, those who call upon his name. Like heat in a dry place, you subdue the noise of the foreigners as heat by the shade of the cloud, so the song of the ruthless is put down. Now comes to the part I really like. And this is, in my mind, a messianic passage. It is a millennial passage. On this mountain, a reference probably to Israel, Judah specific, probably to Jerusalem, Temple Mount, but it also represents the government of God. Mountains often represent governments. So on this mountain, Mount Zion, the Temple Mount, he who is over the armies will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine, of rich food full of marrow, of aged wine well refined. So Isaiah is using the descriptions of a marvelous feast, a get-together to enjoy a luxuriant meal, which is probably representing the Lamb's marriage supper from the book of Revelation. And the reason I say that is because of what's connected to this feast. Verse 7, and he, meaning God, will swallow up on this mountain, meaning right here at Jerusalem, the covering that is cast over all peoples, the veil that is spread over all nations. So something that is universal, something that is overhanging us all. Verse 8 explains what's being talked about. He will swallow up death forever. We know that that is connected to the second coming of Jesus Christ, when the righteous dead and the righteous living are resurrected and transformed respectively into the eternal bodies. They're caught up together to meet the Lord in the air, and thus they will always be with him. And death will no longer have any power over them because they're in their permanent bodies. And so that's being described here. And then we actually have things that are quoted in the New Testament, Book of Revelation in particular. And he who is God will wipe away tears from all faces, and the reproach of his people will be taken away from all the earth, for he who is has spoken. So Jesus comes, he resurrects and transforms the righteous, and he takes death out of the picture. Verse 9, it will be said on that day, behold, this is our God. We have waited for him that he might save us. This is he who is. We've waited for him. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation. And of course, Jesus' name is encoded in all that wording. Yah, he who is. Hoshua, salvation. Yahoshua, Joshua, Jesus. That's the name of our King of Kings and Lord of Lords that's coming back. We're waiting for him right now. And when he shows up, verse number 9 is going to come to pass. Verse 10, for the hand of he who is will rest on this mountain, and Moab shall be trampled down in his place as straw is trampled down in a dunghill. For some reason, Moab becomes representative of evil standing against the coming of the Lord at this time. And so it's going to be put down. He will spread out his hands in the midst of it as a swimmer spreads his hands out to swim. But he who is will lay low his pompous pride together with the skill of his hands. And the high fortifications of his walls will be brought down, lay low, and cast to the ground to the dust. So Moab probably stands here for the kingdom of the beast leader that Jesus is going to put down whenever he comes back as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords in Revelation chapter number 19.